For the next 2 hours, our number is 860-0850 or pound 850 if you're a 360 communication customer. Pound 850 will get you in the studio. And this segment of the show is sponsored today by Computer Renaissance. Now with two locations, two great locations. One is in Crossroads Shopping Center in Cary, and in Raleigh, it's in the North Hills Plaza across from North Hills Mall. Give them a visit.
Get some buy a cable. Do something.
Do anything. We have a treat for you today. It's going to be a great show. I just know it's going to be a great show.
Why do you know that?
Because I know that. It's just because I know that.
We have a full house.
You want to argue? Right off the bat. I'm going to turn the mic off.
This may be the only time I get to talk. We get two really interesting guests.
With us in the studio are two guests. We have Jim Settle, CEO of SST, which stands for Settle Services and Technology, from Virginia, from D.C., Virginia.
Right, Washington, D.C. area, right. Springfield, Virginia.
And we have Mark Shuttleworth from Thought Consulting. And I don't think I even have to say where Mark is from. You will know you'll know it automatically when he starts speaking. Mark is from South Africa. Jim's company, you were the head of the FBI Computer Crime Squad.
Yes.
Help me out here.
I was head of the prototype National Computer Crime Squad, which at the time was the only one in the country and dealt with all the network issues and penetration of networks. And with all the international issues that raised from those.
And you took that knowledge and started your own company now, helping companies that have networks and are on the Internet secure, make their networks more
right.
secure.
Right. We work with large multinational corporations with Internet and global networks. In between the FBI and starting my company, I work for a 3,000-employee systems integration company doing essentially the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And, Mark, your company is the way that I was introduced to it as an ISP, being in the ISP business, are the authentication certificates that we get for our clients so people can come across the Internet and feel secure into the site. So what else does your company, Thought Consulting, what else do you do?
Well, we're a certifying authority. As you picked up, that means that we issue digital certificates, which allow companies to identify themselves to their customers online and their customers to identify themselves to companies online. So we create a framework of secured commerce, essentially.
Okay. There's more and more people that are concerned about the security on the web. This is the hottest thing, and Jim, I know you the bulk of the work that you do is probably doesn't have much to do with the Internet, but with the networks themselves. Internally, the security gap comes from the Internet because now people can get to that network, but you're securing the local network.
But not the local area network. We're dealing with the GANs and the WANs and
right. But,
Internet.
Unless you secure the local one and the other local one and the other local one, make sure they all work together, I guess it doesn't work.
You can still compromise large networks through LANs. But really, we start with the top and start working our way down. And there are tools out there to allow you to work on all the way down. The interesting thing is, and this is a hang-up I have because I was at a conference last week in Washington. It's going to be in New York in 3 weeks. One day was spent talking about the problems of the Internet. Well, the problem's not with the Internet. when you, if your information leaves your building, it's your company, it's got to go out one of three ways. Well, four ways. You can actually have a hard wire that takes it to another building nearby, but that's as far as that goes. Essentially, if you're dealing outside the city, you're going to go internet, you're going to go public switch telephone network, or you're going to go with a packet switch common carrier. You got to use one of the three. They all have the same hardware, they have the same software, they have the same protocols, they all have the same vulnerabilities. So they're all vulnerable.
And that's where your company comes?
Right, and the web's a part of all that, obviously, because it's part of the internet.
In general, what do you think about the general way that networks are treated around our country? And I know you do it in other countries too, but
right.
Do you think we here in the States are paying enough attention to security?
We're dealing with a house of cards here, folks. The big bad wolf can come up and blow it all down. And that's literally where we are. If you take a scale of 0 to 100, with 0 being typically there's no security on that network at all, 100 is we're golden, we're perfect, 0 is we're toast. We're not at the toast level, but we're not much above it. Our experience, both mine and the FBI and commercially, is that most companies are around the 20% level. Almost nobody's up at 80%. One company we've seen actually was implementing things which we think would put them at 80 to 90% level, and they weren't totally there. That was a major media company. But typically, nobody's using them. I mean, a free quick test. You want me to go into that? I can give you a...
Well, we don't need to get into technical and actual...
Well, that's not too technical. Most people know that they're using those or not using them. And the answer typically to those three questions is no, no, no.
Mm. How many companies like you are there that you know of around the country?
Oh, they're cropping up every day. Like you said, it's a hot issue. Everybody's getting into it. There are probably about 5 companies around the U.S. that can do this extremely competently. Because it's not an art and a science, securing these networks. It's a little bit of both. You have to have experience factor. And people ask me, where do you get training for this? You can't. There aren't any schools that teach this type of thing.
So in other words, we are in bad shape here. And as a result, we're actually great... targets for hackers to come in and break in and
exactly, which sets the stage for us, right? The President's Commission on the Critical Information Infrastructure just last month came out a report that said basically everything is vulnerable.
Okay, so now here we're talking again, everybody's talking web. And people are, let's take it this way. Everybody who's on the internet as a company wants the internet to develop to the point that they can do business on the internet. Customers, surfers, users are waiting for a good feeling on the internet to be able to do business. Unless this happens, things are not going to happen on the internet. Like everybody's saying, oh, this is the way things are going to happen. Commerce is going to happen on the internet. You're not going to go down to the store to buy things. Now, that may not happen in our lifetime, but it will happen. And unless it is secured and the customer, the user feels secure, he will not go to spend the money. And, Mark, this is where a company like yours comes into play, is giving the customer that good feeling about being able to click on a link to go and pay money, and that little box will come up and say, you ask for a secured transaction, transactions, and are you sure? And when you see that, you say, wow, I'm coming into a place where there are guards standing all around me, and I've got nothing to worry about.
The whole sort of perception of security in the electronic commerce marketplace is a very complex issue. It's easy to say the problem is encryption, or it's easy to say the problem is network security, or it's easy to say the problem is fulfillment. I think that it's really a maturation process that we have to go through so people are comfortable with doing business that way. Think back to ATMs and credit cards. It's taken years and years and years for people to get comfortable with the process.
Absolutely.
The process of doing business, of placing your orders, of viewing catalogs, and of waiting for the goods to arrive, is subtly different on the net to the real world. And I think that's the real obstacle. Yes, security is important. That, you know, we've had in place for the last 3 years the ability to do completely confidential, completely anonymous transactions. So that's not really a barrier. You can't say that's a barrier. we have, through companies like GIMS, we have the ability for large organizations to validate the security of their infrastructure. So that's not a barrier. I think that the real barriers to electronic commerce are the development and the maturity of a sense of the process, a sense of the business environment on the net.
You're listening to Computers 97 on 850 The Buzz, and we're talking with Jim Settle of SST and Mark Shuttleworth of Thought Consulting, and Larry is raising in his... Yes, Horseshack.
Yeah. I got a question for both Jim and Mark, because as an ex-hacker, which I hate to admit, but...
I want to. Not ex.
The issue that you hear about all the time on the net, besides the security of commerce, is invasion of privacy and how the individual rights, and of course I'm an old believer in PGP, which is the original encryption software, and that raised all kinds of issues in the government. What do you think about all this? Where are the barriers and where are the limits that we're all going to wind up with?
Oh, I've spent 4 days talking about privacy issues. Interesting enough, at a conference last week, somebody was actually standing up, and it was a professor at a university, and essentially saying, when we go to work for companies, companies can monitor our email in the company. They can actually do profiling of everything we access in their network and everything we access on the Internet. The question, and I've got to raise it, people got to stand up here. I mean, there's a point at which you got rights of privacy. Just because we're in the electronic world, you don't give all this stuff up.
Right.
When you send a letter through the post office, I send a letter from me to you, Larry. Let's say it's going to go from Washington down here to Raleigh. Do we expect everybody in the Postal Service that handles this thing to open it and read it? Well, the answer is, of course not. We would go absolutely berserk if that was happening. But why do we allow this in the electronic world? I mean, there's absolutely no reason it should happen. The problem with all this profiling stuff is, where does the Big Brother stuff stop? Now, I got to admit that I'm EFF trained, and for those of you that don't know what that is, that's the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It's like the ACLU. I've gone to the 4 of their 6 conferences that they hold annually where all these issues are discussed. And you know, we still have privacy. The electronic world does not mean we have less privacy. And we, the users of the networks, whether they're Internet, intranets, whatever, virtual private networks, don't care. Just because I go to work for a company doesn't mean that company owns me and everything that I do and everything about me. So you just hit a little hot button with
good.
Me.
I mean, that's what we want. It seems like, on the one hand, you're working to make sure that companies have the ability to control their electronic transmissions, however they are, which, of course, could imply that they can control anything that goes over. I mean, Supreme Court, or at least one of the state's courts, has ruled that email is not private within a company. And people have been fired, people have been...
No, I think that's a bad misinterpretation of the ruling.
No, but it's out there, though. And in fact, it's happened that people have been fired from their jobs for email sent within the company because it is ruled to be company property. And as anyone knows who studies this, the LAN administrator within a company can get to anything.
Right. He owns it. He owns the system. He controls everything. He reads everything.
That's right. So... These are the issues I know that bother a lot of people. And in this country, at least, the judicial system seems to be saying that if you go to work for a company, just like your intellectual property is the property of that company, which you sign over in many cases, most cases anymore, your email is the property of that company. Am I right?
Well,
I mean, that's what's happening.
But we've got to strike a balance here. And
I agree with you.
We're going from one side of the electronic world's going from one side to the other. This is what I call the military syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
We own the machines. We own the property it sits on. We own the airspace. We own you, the military, person, whether you're enlisted or officer. We own everything. You have zero rights. Well, in the commercial world, this is not the way we operate. This is not the way the United States ever intended it to operate. Interesting enough, law enforcement actually, which most people never quite understood when we were dealing with like EFF, they do now, actually is out to protect people's rights, not stomp over. I mean, we really were more in sync with the Electronic Frontier Foundation when I first started this than anybody ever thought we would be. We agreed on 90% of the issues.
Famous last words.
Yeah, we hope.
Well,
because you know what gets the publicity are the big cases like the harassment of the PGP founder.
Yeah, Phil Zimmerman, right. Yeah, Phil. Phil well.
I mean, poor, I can't say poor guy because he made a lot of money in his life, but
right.
he got harassed constantly by the government.
Well, but you have people. I was inside the government when that started, and my comment was...
This is really Big Brother, folks.
I was part of the Big Brother. No, not really. But what I said, I was inside government. I said, this is stupid. I mean, first place, Phil Zimmerman posted it to a site that was in the U.S. And this is the world that most of the legal community and the legislative community have no comprehension of. This is a worldwide system we're dealing with today. You cannot, the U.S. cannot regulate the Internet, neither can South Africa. We can't even come close. And here we are saying, like, it was posted in the site in the U.S. Anybody can go to it and FTP from it or Telnet, FTP, so now you're going to get the file. Of course, today you use your web browser, which is all, you don't see that. Anybody can do it. In 3 years, things have gotten a lot easier for us to do these things. So,
you know,
crazy.
You know, Mark, you have something to say? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious to know why Jim thinks that the legislation that that governs the export of strong crypto is still in place. If the government and law enforcement infrastructure is really that committed to protecting people's privacy, why are they denying the widespread distribution of the tools that individuals can use to protect their own privacy?
Oh, it has nothing to do with protecting an individual's privacy. I mean, that's not what it's about. Look who's driving the U.S. encryption issues from the government side. It's law enforcement.
It's the FBI.
It's the FBI. It's my old employer. And by the way, I've argued all these points with them publicly. Law enforcement has no business driving the encryption issues. Where's their cryptologist? They don't have one. No, but they don't have one. It's NSA. Now, the intelligence community is one of the driving factors behind the FBI being, because it also has, the FBI has an intelligence function, too.
I think we've also got to differentiate quite clearly between the existing legislation, which is very, very heavily centered around the NSA and your foreign monitoring requirements, and the fact that the FBI has very clearly stated that their goal and their commitment is to have total surveillance capability within the domestic market. Now, that is something that really frightens me. You started off controlling crypto as ostensibly to manage the non-U.S. Risk, but it's every time that the debate comes up in your parliament, in the Senate and in the House of Representatives, it always comes back to domestic control, to domestic surveillance. And that's something that I don't think many U.S. citizens realize, that right now there is a battle raging on the legislature.
A lot do realize it. There's always talk about that. Why do, you know, Big Brother wants to do that to us? Are we going to let it? But, yeah, they want. And a lot of people believe that they should be able to.
I think Jim's on our side on this. He's what I hear.
Well, they're both sides. They're two sides of the issue. I mean, France has been in this issue long. I mean, they've had a law in place for a long, long time. Encryption is essentially banned in France unless you register it with the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't have to give them the key. You just have to tell them, I'm using cryptology, and this is what I'm using.
Somebody who does business regularly throughout Europe, I can tell you that France is steadily losing the battle to encourage electronic commerce within its borders. Why is that? Because it's too much trouble. You have no sense of security. You have no sense of being able to determine your own level of security within French borders. Multinational companies, and let's face it, any company in Europe these days is multinational, just
right.
simply do not create the infrastructure in France to support French customers. It's not worth it.
Very interesting.
Right.
Guys, we, fortunately, and unfortunately for what's happening right now, we need to break away for a commercial. So we'll be right back. But your calls are coming up next on the station. We want to pay your rent and mortgage and also your car payment, 850 The Buzz. The computer's 97 on 850 The Buzz. Our number is 860-0850. We're talking with Mark Shuttleworth of Thought Consulting and Jim Settle of SST, Settle Service and Technology. We're talking about computer security and issues that surround it. And I wanna just say something about before I let you guys go into it, because I mean it's beautiful the way you guys are doing it now. I can just go and have a cup of coffee. This is something that interests a lot of people is when the Decency Act not being allowed to post, let's call it X-rated material on the web. People understand the stuff like that. We were trying to say that it's illegal to do. And in essence, we're telling the world you can't do it. Either that, or the people that came out with the idea of let's do it like that, don't understand that the internet is worldwide. It's not just U.S.
Right.
And it came up quite a few times about the fact that you can tell U.S. customers or U.S. Companies that make money on the web, and as far as I'm concerned, this is the only companies today that are making money from the web are those adult sites, because people are going poor money their way.
Yeah, that's far from true.
Here we go. We start another one.
They're making a lot of money, no question about
who,
it. But
who else is
adult money? Sites are making a lot of money, but a lot of people in the what I would call homogenous product markets, like direct marketing, direct mail,
yeah,
CDs, books. Anything where you know what you want, you're just looking to compete on the basis of price.
Mm-hmm.
All of those industries are doing real well on
that. Okay. I stand corrected.
Wait a minute. I want to take another approach here, because this is something that really gets my... This is another one of my hot buttons here. Electronic commerce, first place, it's not going to be cash. Okay, who needs another cash vehicle out there? I don't need one. The only one I can think of that need it are the bad guys for money laundering.
If you're cooking payment systems, it's got to have the same properties as cash.
Yeah, like... DigiCash and stuff like that, all those different things. I'm saying, who needs cash? Who needs e-cash, right? I don't see that as a market. There are three things out there that I think we're looking at. We're looking at business use of the network, we're looking at credit card use of the network, and we're looking at cash part of the network. I don't see cash being a factor. Credit cards will be somewhat of a factor in growing, probably. Those two will never, in my opinion, top 20% of the electronic commerce market. What business is using the networks wildly, but they're not using it to move money. They're using it to move information, plant production information, multinational companies. I got to move it from Research Triangle Park to my corporate offices over in Zurich, Switzerland.
Okay.
And this is financial information. It's product manufacturing information. It's research and design information. That's the type of commerce that businesses are going to use the net for.
That's defining the net by where we are right now. I think you've got to look way beyond that and see a world in which the internet isn't just a PC thing. It's plugged into a little device which is on the inside of your kitchen cabinet. So when you're looking for a recipe, you just whip open the cupboard and press a button and say, look, I'm looking for something to do with chicken.
Yeah, but that's information. That's not commerce.
No, but I'm prepared to pay 20 US cents for this new recipe.
Oh, now, wait a minute. You're getting into something else now. A pay-per-view issue. I don't see that as ever happening. I mean, we don't have that real big on the cable.
What I'm saying is, if you're going to, like, define net commerce as where we are now, then you're making a big mistake. Net commerce is going to pervade every industry and really change the way we do.
Let me put it more simply, okay. And I understand what Mark is saying.
I understand.
You're looking at it from one company does business with another company, or one company is doing business with branches around the world moving information. The
right.
Surfer, which makes probably 90% of internet users, the private citizens sitting here in the States or anywhere around the world, could care less about the information moving.
Agreed.
He wants to be able to go there and get something, buy something from a distant place, and feel good about it and not feel like he can get in trouble, which I have a take on this one too. If you are not talking about, if money is not going to play a factor in commerce on the internet, then what should we pour in that funnel that goes into the PC? Is that what that funnel is on top of my PC for?
Yeah.
I mean, I can put money.
A funnel? You have a funnel there?
you have to use some type of money, because the big companies are using the internet to move information. I agree
right.
with you. But the little guys, like who sit at home and is dialing into the internet, he is not there to move information. The other big segment of internet users, and I keep saying that, are the little kids who are using it today for homework and to get information out of it. Of course, many of them get in trouble because they can get into all those sex sites. But really, students have a lot of information they can get out of it. Companies can move information. That leaves a big, big part of the population that wants to go there, look at places, you know, just like channel surfing. Because there's nothing specific they want. They just want to go from one place to another.
But I think it's important to realize that even if somebody doesn't buy over the net,
right,
he can still do commerce over the net if he does all of his sort of search and information recovery about what he wants to buy over the net.
Absolutely.
And in that sense, I think, you know, this is happening right now. A lot of customers are a lot better off for the net because they're making smarter decisions about what to buy based on having more information readily available from the supplier.
And why is it happening, Mark?
Because it's easy and cheap.
It's easy and cheap, but why don't they buy over the net? Because many companies don't allow them to, or don't really go to the distance of putting the site there for them to buy, because they know that the customer will not buy unless they feel secured. Because the media is making it as such that if you put your credit card over the net, everybody's got it.
Oh, no, they don't. Come on. It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
When I go to give a talk about stuff like that, nobody can say anything. Is you go to a restaurant and you eat.
That's an education process. I think people are slowly learning that if they see that little lock, if they see that blue line, if they see that, then at least they know that they're sending the credit card information securely to whoever they
and that's the argument that Jim has, that it really is not as secured, but it gives us...
Why don't we deal with that right away?
Yeah.
Why don't we get right into it?
Sure.
Talk about
because number one is you got more security on the internet using your credit card than you got doing a telephone mail order to JCPenney or whoever, and you use them for an example.
Agreed.
You got zero protection on the telephone. Why do we want it to be any different on the internet? Why are people afraid to use it?
Because it's trivial to automatically filter. If you're an ISP, you can watch every bit of information flowing across your wires, and it's trivial to look for credit card numbers.
So the telephone company.
You had a case right here in Cary,
North Carolina, the delivery.
Let me tell you something.
It's not easy to monitor telephone.
Oh, sure.
Mark,
not
the other way around, Mark.
If you've got 6,000 conversations running, you've got to listen to
it. It happened right here in Cary.
Let me put it this way, and it may not apply to everybody. First, just let me remind everybody, you're listening to 850 The Buzz, and this is Computers 97. We're talking with Jim Settle and with Mark Shuttleworth. We're talking about computer security, and Larry's sitting here saying, the thing is, as an ISP, Mark, I have the ability to read stuff, and don't think that the temptation is not there every now and then. But right after that temptation I'd like to find out what... The second thought that comes to my head is, if anybody found out that I did this, my business goes to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do it. Because this is in the office. Now, phone company have thousands of technicians out there who can tap into lines anywhere, and you'll never know about them. You'll never know about it. They are all over the place. Here, the server is in my place. I have the ability to do it, but it's you have one or two or 10 or 20 people that you have to make sure are not doing it.
But that's your ISP. That's your office. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of offices like that around the country.
But I'd like to believe that nobody wants their business to go to... by the wayside,
because if you read my email.
If you were to filter email for things like credit card numbers, or if you were to filter traffic for things like credit card numbers, extract those credit card numbers and sell them on the black market. I don't know how that works, but I know there is a black market in credit cards.
Oh, there always was.
People wouldn't know that you got it out of their email, just like they wouldn't know that you got it by listening in on the conversation.
But
what I'm saying is that for virtually no cost, you could put a machine down on your network which just sits and listens for credit card information.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you wanted to do it by telephone, you'd have to have N people sitting, listening actively for credit card information.
You put the same filtering equipment on it that you're talking about doing on an ISP.
Yeah, you do telephone
system.
What are you talking about? Where people give a credit card number over a touch phone system.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking about where someone gives it over the telephone by voice. The only way that you would trap that as a telephone company is to be listening in with a human being.
Oh, yeah, if you sit there and somebody is listening, if you're actually saying, my card number is 4420, you know, somebody's listening. But it can happen. And I think it takes a whole lot more resources and knowledge to get it out of the internet than it does from the other. You can jump in.
I have to disagree. I've seen sites where people, a guy showed me how he could create a little innocuous machine sitting in a corner at an ISP. The ISP didn't even have to know what it was doing. That was listening into all the traffic that ran through that and pulling out credit card numbers. And he did it just to demonstrate that it could be done. That cost him nothing.
Exactly. But there's something that makes this issue moot, which is this. Credit card laws and the way we operate is no individual has an exposure for fraud greater than $50.
Honestly,
in all the years I've dealt with it, you don't even get If you're a victim of fraud, your card's a victim of fraud, I don't know if one credit card company's charged your customer anything, not even the $50 minimum.
Yeah.
So whether you use it over the telephone or the internet, it's immaterial. Besides, if I want to steal this stuff, what do I want to go put a sniffer on for? I'm going to go straight to somebody like L.L. Bean and JCPenney. This is what Kevin Mitnick did. He went to Netcom, stole 20,000 out of their database. First place, it's all sitting in the database, whether they called it in by phone, by internet, by whatever. And guess what? It's all unencrypted. I've got thousands. And I've got it for less effort than it takes to do what you're talking about, which is put a sniffer on a network somewhere.
Yeah, but right. you have to have the knowledge that Kevin had.
But that's easy to get. The internet's great with that. It's great with information.
Yeah, that's true.
Good and bad.
I just have to say this. Whatever customers do, they need to take the obvious steps to protect themselves. So if you're going to send your credit card information across the net, make sure that you're sending it across an encrypted channel. What is the point in taking an unnecessary risk?
You don't even need to send it over an encrypted channel. What do you need to do that for? You know, you when you use
because
your credit card over the telephone,
because it's better than nothing.
When you call LL Bean to place an order,
in credit card fraud related to the internet. In other words, if everybody started sending their number across the net unencrypted, just because the worst thing that could happen is they get a $50 charge to their account,
Wait a minute, you send it over the telephone.
Let's see what Jim has to say.
Go ahead. You send it over the telephone unencrypted.
Yes, but there's been no demonstrable increase in fraud because of that, because people have started getting their credit card number out.
Oh, wait a minute. It's billions of dollars a year of fraud in that.
Yes, but it's, I mean, we don't hear about it. That's the point.
Yeah.
So it's an insignificant drop in the bucket compared to the volume of transactions that's being done. This whole thing is done on an insurance basis. Those merchants pay 3-5%. And that's effectively an insurance policy. Okay. Now, that doesn't work if everybody abuses the system. Insurance doesn't work if everybody goes out and deliberately trashes their vehicles.
Right.
Okay? And insurance fraud is easier to perpetrate. Insurance fraud, in a sense, would be easier to perpetrate if people were irresponsible with their credit card numbers. Which means that if we suddenly saw a huge increase in credit card fraud, all right, the merchants would go ballistic and that $50 limit would get raised to a $1,000 limit.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that people take steps to protect themselves.
Yeah, I agree with the steps, but you got to do... Let's get back. It boils down to the basic thing. Who do you give your credit card number to? I don't care what medium you use. You're going to use the same rules. If you call me, I'm not going to give you my credit card number. I am only giving my credit card number to somebody I contact. I know specifically who I'm contacting. This has nothing to do with the medium you're using. It's just common, basic sense that we've all been taught. Why do we need special rules dealing with the internet? In my opinion, we don't. I mean, frankly, if you take the set technology they're putting in there, what the technology that exists now with like Netscape and some of the browsers where they can encrypt those transactions, that's way better than you got on the telephone now. You're talking about the new set technology that credit card companies are developing. It's going to take it even three steps higher than that, way more than that, actually. You got tons of protection on the internet, and you got nothing on the telephone.
It's so secure, no one will use it.
No. It'll be easy to use. I disagree with you. I think it'll be easy to use. But you'll be having way more protection on the internet, and you got nothing on the phone, which we've used for years.
Well, you're not going to take an encryptor and put it on your phone every time you go to order something because of the mere fact that the other side doesn't have the same decryptor to do it. But you can
do
it.
We can easily do it.
I know. No, well, not easily. We have a computer that we can put a program in there, and they give us the program for free,
right,
and we can implement it. It's easy to implement because the tools are there. You try and get every citizen to buy encrypted decryptor thing
It's not mass marketed right now.
Right.
The government has it. It's called Stu Telephone, which encrypts the transmissions. But it's not mass marketed because the public hasn't had a demand for it.
And that's because, and again, my point is that it's because when it comes to fraud that's happening over the internet or for break-ins that happen over the internet, the media jumps on it and right away you hear, oh boy, you know, gee, internet, look what it's doing. When it happens over the phone, nobody talks about it because it's just it's a normal thing. And this, I think, is the problem. And this is why it's not being developed to use on the phone. It's not mass marketed, but it's a lot of effort is being done to correct the computer side of it because it's easy to do. And it's what the public wants, because the public hears negative, negative, negative internet, and they want to see some positive happens with it. Nobody talks negative, negative, negative about a telephone.
Right.
something also that we see happening a lot is that people lose their credit card number or credit card numbers get stolen over physical channels, like someone digs through the waste paper basket in a restaurant. But then they use that credit card number on the net.
Uh-huh.
And the guy whose credit card number was stolen automatically assumes that it was stolen over the net as well as used over the net. And that's very rarely.
Good point. I don't
know of a single case of a credit card being stolen while it was in transit over the net, you know, while it was even vaguely encrypted. I know of cases where numbers have been stolen when they were unencrypted, and I know of cases where numbers have been stolen from companies which had a database which was hacked over the net.
We need to break away for another commercial. Your calls are coming up next on the station. I want to pay your rent, your mortgage, and your car payment, 850. Welcome back to Computers 97 on 850 The Buzz. Our number is 860-0850, 860-0850, and we're talking with Mark Shuttleworth of Thought Consulting and Jim Settle of Settle Services and Technology.
We designed it to be that way. Yeah. Don't worry.
Mark's company is the company that, one of the companies that provides security authentication certificates over the net. That's when you click on a secured site and that little box comes up and tells you that you are in a secured server on a secure site. Jim's company helps big corporations and small ones to secure their network and make sure everything is working right. And Larry Dial is sitting here raising... Okay, Horseshack.
Well, I feel like I got to raise my hand because I've got these two geniuses over here.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble now.
I know.
Wait, before you start, let's give some...
Somebody woke up.
A couple of calls. Good morning. You're on 850 The Buzz.
I am on. This is John.
Speak a little louder.
I am on. This is John.
Hey.
I wanted to just kind of give you my scenario on the Internet as far as commerce and individual use.
Uh-huh.
I have a 61... Sunbeam Alpine. That's a car, not an appliance. And I also have an Amiga with a video toaster.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to get any local support on those.
Right.
And on the Sunbeam, I'm surprised how much there is stuff on the Internet. Buying, selling, getting parts, things like that. And same with the Amiga.
Uh-huh.
And there's... You know, that's an individual use for Internet where I couldn't get that kind of information anyplace else.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
The information that you found on the net, is that put up by the manufacturer, or typically is that sort of user groups, just people with a common interest in a common appliance that need an environment to discuss, you know?
Yeah, mostly users groups.
That's one of the things that I find so fantastic about the net, is that we, in many cases, bypassing the official sources of information
people
and going straight
people.
Person to person.
Yeah.
It really is like a little village in many senses. People just get together with easily and start sharing ideas and information.
Yeah, but we had all that before the web hit the scene 3 years ago. Well, it's been around a little longer than that, but essentially we had that with the BBSs way back. What happened is we got the browsers that made things easy for everybody to use, and that's the great part of the whole Internet is all that information. Is easy to get worldwide.
John, what was your your other comment?
Well, I have a kind of a curiosity question on the Usenet. Mm-hmm. There's like over 40 triangle groups.
Right.
And my daughter lives in Winston-Salem, which is the triad.
Right.
And I only found one there.
One what? Triad?
Yeah, news group under Usenet.
Yeah, but remember one thing. This has to do with the local population and how active they are. We had a very good guy here in Durham who actually started many of these triangle groups. They're not really as local as people think that they are, and your daughter can get them up there too, you know.
Yeah.
It's not restricted to our area.
Yeah, I was wondering since I was on a local ISP, if somehow, you know, news group was here that way, and if my daughter got on a local one in Winston-Salem, she'd find a lot of them in the triad and only a few in the triangle.
She may find that her ISP, that an ISP in the triad carries and creates a bunch of news groups that are triad specific. But then you may also find, I don't know what the sort of relative population ratios are. What you tend to find is that a community gets together and creates a news group. And then as the volume in that news group grows and gets sort of less specific, that news group gets fragmented into sub-news groups. If there are a lot of people here in the triangle, then you'll find that they started with one sort of triangle-specific group, which then got fragmented down into different, arts, entertainment, events-type groups and interest groups. And maybe it's just a question of time for the same thing to happen in the triad.
Can I jump in here? Because I see this is not where we're going in the future. Here's where I think we're headed is where Yahoo, I think, kind of set the stage for this, is rather than have local use groups as so much being the same place where we go for the local stuff, is Yahoo is actually taking it and doing city by city by city. And you're going to see, and we're already seeing that grow. And you're going to see tons of stuff that relate only to the Raleigh-Durham area. It's going to be by all kinds of national providers, local providers. I mean, this is the beauty of the net.
Yeah, but what Yahoo brings you is information about your local area.
Yeah, right.
This is another sign that the net is maturing. The first thing that everybody does when they get onto the net is go visit Outer Mongolia. you know what I mean? It's this amazing sense of sitting in your living room and being able to have a real-life conversation with someone anywhere in the world and being able to get information about the most obtuse things happening in the most obtuse places. The next thing that happens when people are comfortable with it is, damn, where's this movie show? and are there seats available at Pleasant Valley tonight for the 7 o'clock show for Red Corner? That, to me, is when the net becomes an everyday tool, and that's fantastic to see it happening.
Yeah, I heard they're going to be coming out with reservations for movie theaters like to do major events.
Well, hey, guys, the rest of the world's got it.
That's all we need.
And he's right about that.
Ow, smart. Ow.
Yeah. Okay, John, your point's good about the stuff that, I mean, the stuff that you couldn't get 5 years ago for your Sunbeam automobile.
Yeah.
That you can readily go out there on the Internet now today and find, whether it's manufacturers or Usenet groups or whatever, you can find this stuff today. And you can pull it down, and I did it. I had a computer that had to be repaired. It needed a driver. Go to the manufacturer's website, pull the driver down. I had it fixed in an hour.
Right.
2 years ago, it would have taken me a couple of days to get the disc from the manufacturer. So this is the beauty of the thing, and you got a really good point there.
Of course, he crashed the computer since.
John.
No. I didn't cost too much money to do that.
Go ahead, Larry. John, one more question.
Sure.
Would you or have you bought something for your Alpine from stuff from the net?
To be honest, not yet.
Would you consider doing it?
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking for a gas cap, for one.
So here's an example of someone who would, in fact...
have I got a deal for you?
Amnon, shut up.
Yeah, there's a couple national magazines coming out with that, but they can't even get the gas cap.
Oh, well.
All you people out there, help John.
That's a question for Car Talk.
I have a front load of gas caps. Would you like to talk to me?
All right, John. Thanks for calling 850 The Buzz. All right. I'll tell you what, here. Good morning. You on 850 The Buzz?
Fred Malyazzi from Gas Caps Incorporated. How are you? Good morning.
We want three of them, please.
Yes, and what's your website?
Gas caps.
Okay, got it. Good.
I think the problem with the Internet is it's not a major problem, as you suggested. Security is much better than once. But newspapers sell stories based on fright and bad news. So anything that says Internet and security sells, I agree with you completely. The other problem is there are... The Internet is sort of like going to church or going to synagogue. Those people who have... That's for Larry. Those people...
Tongues a lot.
Those people who have all the knowledge are not in the government. Most people in the government don't have the knowledge, so they're able to do what they're trying to do.
And most of the people who are in the government have the knowledge. Like, Jim, get out so where they can make a real life.
So what's your point?
Well, thanks, Adnan. I'm glad you clarified that. The point is, for the average guy who's working at a job and who's sending email back and forth, he thinks he's given up the right to privacy because the government tells him and the government supports business.
Hmm.
That most of the new products that are coming to market actually have the security built in. I agree with you that a lot of people felt that they gave up security because when they installed their first email package, it said, warning, 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 everything you send is transmitted in the clear. From now onwards, any major email package that gets sold will have a little button that says, this button encrypts your mail. So I think that it's more a question of the evolution of our interaction with the net, that nowadays, from now on, people are going to expect security. And in fact, we may see the reverse happening. We may see people going from thinking, oh, now I'm a pawn in a grand game, to saying, well, now I have the ability to protect entirely my privacy in a way that I never could with the U.S. Postal Service.
But the point you made with the telephone is correct. When I get on the telephone, I don't have any screens or buttons telling me what is or what is not protected.
Right.
Okay.
There was that horror story about some woman who gave all her details to a person that she thought was an airline operator, and he turned out to be
The guy turned out to be Larry Dial.
Jimmy, you're gonna have a.
Yeah, I think we're missing a basic point here. The manufacturers all want you to believe they're going to have all these products with all these encryption technologies, and the reality is they will. The question is, are we going to use them? Do you use PGP when you do email? I mean, I only use it on sensitive stuff. Let me tell you what, Fred. Phil Zimmerman, not Fred, your Fred. Phil Zimmerman.
No, his Gene.
His Gene.
Or whatever.
Yeah. But anyway, Phil Zimmerman said in Boston at the Computers Freedom and Privacy Conference a year and a half ago, he says, don't encrypt the messages that are important to you. You've got to encrypt everything. Because if you only use encryption for the important messages, the government knows which ones are the important messages. I thought it was strange, but anyway.
But the average guy who's at home listening to this show, no offense, Matt, he's at the bottom of the technical cycle. Only the people, like the two experts and the top 10%, know how to use all these features.
Right. I agree.
Which is why I think that it should be as easy as possible for any vendor to build it into their product so that by default the thing runs in secure mode.
It's not easy.
By default, if I send a message to a guy for whom I have a cryptographic key, that message should be encrypted. If I've said that it's going to him, I don't intend for it to go to the world. Therefore, the product by default should encrypt it.
This may shock Larry. Larry being the former hacker, and I being the former NSA employee. what we couldn't do is we couldn't read most of the messages. But when we saw a volume of messages between A and B, and we saw certain message externals, that told us more than we needed to know.
Exactly. Yes. Everybody goes on about law enforcement absolutely needing access to encrypted messages. I would say that's nonsense. There's more than enough real-world activity and non-encrypted activity to give law enforcement the clues and the insight that they need to do their job properly.
Yeah, we knew who the people were. We knew where they were located, and we knew enough about them. And when they did it, and when they sent something that we knew was an emergency, because there were certain signs on the exterior, like a ZZZ, we knew what to do. So when I read all of Dial's mail tonight, I...
Gene,
I have my own encryption package.
Gene, we have to go to a commercial.
I will not bill you for this call. That's okay.
Thanks for calling 850 the Bud. All right. We need to break away, and we'll be back with Jim Settle and with Mark Shuttleworth, and with Larry Dial. He is hacking, but he's still here. And your call, and with your calls. Your calls are coming up next on the station. I want to pay your rent, your mortgage, and your car payment. 850 The Buzz.
850 The Buzz.